best of FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio presents Joey Page.
Many mentions, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Can I get you to just do a little, can you just advertise the show quickly for us?
Joe Page is kind of tight.
Joe Page is my real name. I've added a showbiz Y.
That's right. Why would you do that?
Joe Page. It's too late now.
I think you should drop the Y.
Yeah.
Joe Page suits the mustache, too.
Okay.
Yeah, Joe Page.
Turn the page, sick. Joe.
And the suit. Yeah, I think Joe, man.
Joe Page!
I've already done it.
Joe Page.
Made a lot of posters with Joey Page on.
Hey, this is Michael from Many Mansions, and you're listening to Joe Page. Page on FUBAR Radio every Wednesday, 2 p.m.
And I'm very excited to be talking to Kelsey and Nick from Local Natives. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Letterman was fun. I had an interesting situation at the end of our set. He's like, oh, where are you guys from? And here, I'll go over here so like it makes sense. So I was just like, Silver Lake! He's like, cool, thanks. And then he leaves.
Maybe to make you feel better, we'll do the reverse. So I'm going to get you to ask me where I'm from.
Yeah, where are you from?
Bexley Heath! Right, you got to represent where you're from.
Yeah.
John Grant, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Joey.
Do you feel you are appreciated enough in the music business? You're like a genius in music, so...
Thank you for the fantastic compliments. I don't feel particularly great at what I do, so it's always nice to hear that. I don't know, I don't feel like I'm allowed to have an opinion about that. I think I'm probably getting what I can handle. I wonder if I would be able to take the kind of attention that some people get.
Band of Skulls, welcome into...
Thank you very much.
Russell and Emma, how you doing? I'm sure you were far too busy to be aware of this, but it was pancake day. How are your pancaking skills? Are you any good at making them? Are you any good at flipping them?
I do a good American pancake.
Baking soda?
Dad's recipe is amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's the secret though, isn't it, to make them rise?
In the fridge for a bit, just to chill.
That's an extra thing that will help me next time I make them.
Every Wednesday from 2 p.m. Yeah.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Right, let's get into this then, because I'm very, very excited. A bit of background. We've got Puma Rosa on the show, who made one of just the best albums in recent times with their last effort, The Witch, their debut album. And now Devastation, the second album, is coming out, and I'm very, very excited to get my ears around that. I am pretty certain it was Nick, came to a gig. It's now 3 years later, we're down the line. It's amazing for me to be able to welcome Isabel from Puma Rosa into the studio. How are you doing?
Hi. Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm fine.
First, I want to start in a slightly miniature kind of place on this. I was looking back at some of your like live performances. I've never actually seen you live.
Oh,
I can't. How spooky is this? When I came to interview you guys, it was like during a sound check.
Right.
It was actually almost exactly 3 years ago. It was something like the 27th of October.
Yeah, that's
so that's
bizarre.
Really spooky. Because you were doing, what's that place? Near Shoreditch High Street Station.
Oh, Village Underground.
Village Underground, that's right.
Yeah, I got one of those things on Instagram, like, what were you doing 3 years today?
Yeah.
As Village Underground.
So that's
how
exactly
odd.
How weird is that?
Yeah.
But because I've not seen you live, and I was like trying to imagine what that's like, and then I stumbled across some videos, and then I looked at your Jules Holland.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's the first time I've ever seen anybody play a guitar with a padded drumstick.
Yeah, it's, I don't know where I got the idea to do that, but I guess I sort of was thinking of maybe like a, you know, like a fiddle.
Yeah, exactly.
But then it's harder and like shinier, so it makes a more sort of iridescent.
Yeah, like a shimmery kind of sound. But it's so great. I was like, that is so cool. So yeah, I wanted to know. Almost, that's my most burning question. Where did you think of that?
I suppose I'm not really like a trained guitarist, so I don't approach the guitar like perhaps a sort of more a learned musician might. So I might be like, oh, what shall I do now? And then just sort of hit it or bang it.
I think or I was throw it.
I think I'd been hitting the body of the guitar with the padded drumstick,
yeah.
And that makes a really lovely sound.
Oh, cool.
And then just started scratching it with the other one, yeah.
Great, but yeah, so I reckon you're the inventor of that.
Yes.
We'll call that the Isabel. If I ever see anyone else do it, oh, yeah, they're doing the Isabel.
Isabel. Oh, that's really nice.
So I'm going to it's basically just a compliment, this part, right?
Yes.
Ready? But, like, you've got an incredible voice. So how did you know that you had in South London, you'd say, oh, great set of pipes on you. How did you know that you could sing? Was there like...
I had my pipes.
Did you know, like, was you, did you stumble across it? Did you do any kind of, yeah?
When I was like a kid, like when I was kind of, I don't know, 12, 13, I loved singing. Like, you know, I'd always be singing. But I sort of slightly left it behind as something that was a bit, I don't know, maybe I thought it was a little bit egotistical or something, which is stupid. Mm. But I guess because the school I went to didn't really encourage music particularly, if you did it, it would be more like musical theatre.
Yeah, right. I think my school was kind of like that.
Yeah, which I did. I actually quite like some musical theatre, but, you know, when you're like 17, 18, that's not what you're into.
Yeah, right.
So, I don't know, I sort of knew that I could sing a bit, but then, yeah, I guess joining this band, the first band, it was quite like punk, it was quite heavy. Then you really had to sort of sing or you wouldn't be heard. So I guess that was a sort of getting thrown in at the deep end, like having to make a lot of noise. There wasn't, you kind of couldn't be shy or like, they'd be like, next.
I swear I've seen this written down somewhere, but I'm not sure where, and I'm a bit of a scatterbrain, so I'm just going to kind of ask you about it before I make sure I'm not going down the wrong path with this, right? But you got double-barreled surname, right? Is it Munoz?
Munoz.
Yeah, Munoz. So where's that from?
Yeah, Chilean. My dad's Chilean.
Chilean, right, yeah. Because I was going to say, I don't know if you recognise this, but like, there's a very distinctive kind of South American kind of timbre to your voice as well. Have you noticed that? Like the power seems to be like very kind of South American kind of feel
That's
to it.
Nice, because I've been thinking recently, because I have a sister and I have a brother, but he's fully Chilean, and my sister just appears so Latino,
right?
And I really don't, so it's nice that I've got it somewhere.
Yeah, you've got it in your and like, I don't know, like a lot of your song titles seem to have like really iconic symbols to them, and that's something that I think you, there's a few bands, Los Bichos is one, and then Calvaluis, that's right. So like, tends to be this kind of like, they go for these big symbolistic kind of song titles and things. And I just, maybe it's a bit of a coincidence, I don't know, but when you're writing your songs, do you feel like you tap into any sort of heritage, or is it, it's a really clumsy way of asking you about how you make your music or write your stuff, but it feels like quite spiritual, your music.
Yeah, I suppose there's that Latin sensibility, like when I chat with my dad, or especially if my dad sends me an email or a text, it's so emotional.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what I'm going for. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I guess when I write, it's like, yeah, my default is it's pretty emotional. Or even if I'm being like a bit flippant, I'll be like, it's still quite sort of heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I like the idea of bringing these kind of icons, like, I don't know, like the priestess or the best friend or the witch or the devastation or whatever, like these states or personages or something that we can identify with in kind of almost like a picture book type
way. Exactly,
and then hopefully say something a bit more nuanced in the song. But I don't know, I felt definitely the witch had that vibe, but with devastation I haven't thought about that actually.
I mean, obviously I've not heard it yet because it's not out, it seems like it's two very unique components that make your band different to a lot of bands. And one we've touched on is your voice, and the other one is the drumming is also really phenomenal, and the drum sequences are like completely original to a lot of stuff that I've heard. So you've got these two like amazing things. Where do you think you like want to push this to? Like, have you got like big ambitions and goals? Because you've got the tools and everything and it's there, but like, what do you want to do in like your like dreams? What do you want to fulfill from this point on, do you reckon?
Well, I suppose, and Nicholas on drums, Nick Owen, he is fucking amazing, like such an incredible drummer, so inventive, like so exciting to listen to. I don't know, I think that's, I'm not much of a planner. We kind of just play, which maybe is not good, but I suppose the kind of stuff that we seem to be jamming recently is actually kind of a bit more like spacious, it's a bit more like, it's a little bit more chill.
Right, okay.
I feel we've made these like such dramatic albums. But then again, it's kind of quite, maybe it's just a process. Maybe it's after doing that kind of music, then you need a little phase of just chilling out, playing.
And you don't always want to like make the same thing because otherwise people would
where do you go?
Exactly. So
but then again, when we perform, like we did a little gig for Extinction
Rebellion. Yes, I was going to ask you about this.
Trafalgar Square. Which just felt amazing. And that was just like, oh, yeah, like the performance and that kind of engagement with the audience and that sort of... It's like, I guess it's kind of drama, but it's also just very personable and very present.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is, I guess that kind of side of things is rock music. So it's like, oh, we actually just a rock band, but we've been like trying like drum and bass, dance music, all these different things.
But then it always, and I think it's the key to a really great band, is you still always sound like you. It's not like, oh, they're trying to do this, yeah. No, they're trying to do that. It's always like,
yeah, it comes in quite organically. Twist. Like so. To Moya, who does on this current album a lot of the drum sequencing, yeah, he brings in also, like, he'll bring in the more sort of drum bassy elements, and then yeah, Nick's sort of a bit more jazzy, or yeah, everyone has their thing. Jamie secretly just wants it to be like Lou Reed or something.
Basically, I've still got so much, but we've basically run out of time, which is such a shame. The album is out on the 15th of November.
Correct.
Devastation.
Yeah, yeah.
But quickly before we go, number one, can you recommend me a film that has like stayed with you for ages? We've been talking about that a lot in the show today.
My Own Private Idaho.
Okay.
Love that film.
All right, I'm going to check that out. And what's your thoughts on soup?
I do quite like beetroot soup with a bit of sour cream on
it. Oh, like Polish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A borscht.
Right. Yeah,
it's kind of intense, but it's delicious.
Okay, good. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, such a pleasure.
Yeah, such a fan of your album as well that came out before, so I'm really looking forward to this one.
FUBAR Radio presents...
Access All Areas.
It's the one and only Michael Griffiths from Love Island, Michael!
Yes, it is.
Couple were the loudest in bed?
Tommy and Molly. I slept next to them, and I like there's times I'm just looking at them like, can you stop? Like, I'm trying to sleep. Like, just let me fall asleep, then continue your business. I don't know what they were doing, but they were active.
My word!
Access All Areas. Every Thursday from 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
The gossip's already kicking off.
Good job we weren't on air about a minute ago. Fair. But anyway. Yeah, I'm so excited.
The absolutely gorgeous Jessen Pialzi is here.
Thanks, guys.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm really good. I'm so happy to see you guys again.
So it's been a long time since you were last on the show, and a lot has happened to you.
It has
indeed.
It's
fair to say.
Yeah.
I think you were married. Can we say that?
I know, divorced fully.
Woo! Congratulations.
Most certainly. Thank
you. Yeah. What's life been treating you to?
I feel like I've gone back to being my 20-year-old self again, but not as stupid.
Right.
So, like,
that's pretty good.
I understand life, but I'm happy. So I've just stopped being boring and I'm back to living my good life.
Living a good life.
That's
because
the best
I've
way,
seen you, like, in LA and you've been...
Yeah. I was filming a movie called Rhea, which was a sci-fi film, and I got the lead role, and I was with Luke Goss and
Amazing.
Dean Cain. So it was like
Superman.
Back to my childhood dreams, basically.
Hold on. The Superman.
I used to have a big crush on Dean Cain.
Is he single?
I'm seeing him tomorrow, actually. Come along. So it's the premiere of The Seven tomorrow, which is my horror film that I did produced by Dean Cain. And he is going to be...
Is it Alex Reed in this?
He is, yeah. He had a part in it, yeah.
Yes. Because I interviewed Alex, but he said he's not going to do his own premiere. I was like, why not?
You don't really see him much around anymore, do you? He's a bit out of the limelight.
He's doing his acting. He's doing his acting. He's in the movie.
Yeah, so tell us about the film.
So it's a horror film. And I have been obsessed with horror since I was a kid. So when I came out of CBB, Amanda Barry was like, Jess, get back into your acting. I went to theatre school my whole life and I kind of went off the rails, went on a funny route round it. But I'm back and I thought...
I think you can definitely say that.
Funny route round.
Remind people, what shows did you do?
Okay, X on the beach.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is, do you know what? I filmed it when I was like 22. I'm 30 now. It's a long, long time ago.
Which is odd because in my mind, X on the beach is still fairly recent.
It was such a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until CBB, which was the second to last one.
And who, remind everyone,
we
who
had, like,
in
Amanda Barry, Anne Widdecombe, Maggie
Courtney
Oliver,
Act.
Courtney Act, who won it,
It was the Year of the Woman. The Year of the Woman.
Yeah, it was
Anne
Year of the
Widdecombe
Woman.
Was something else. Oh, right. Funny, it was
it?
Hilarious. Yeah. But you got on with everyone.
Do you know why? I just thought to myself, okay, I struggled in there because it was loads of random people that I never met before, and then you're just living with them and that's it. But what was nice is that I kind of thought to myself, well, what other situation in the world am I going to get to sit and have a chat with Anne Widdecombe, a politician. When I've been all my life, I've only ever studied theatre. So I come out and I suddenly got a chance to talk to someone about Brexit, which is probably the worst thing. I hate hearing that word at the moment.
We're not allowed to mention the B word.
But, not around me.
It was just like I got to have a real conversation with a real politician.
Yeah. And those opportunities don't come up very often, right? But like you said, so you kind of went about your career probably in a bit of a roundabout way to how most people would do it.
Yeah, and then I was talking to Amanda Barry when we was in the show.
Legend.
And I love her. She's amazing. I love her so much. And I just said, you know, Amanda, I've always trained at Italia Conti, my theatre school, and I'm just desperate to get back into it, but I feel like I've ruined my chances and had a meltdown. And she's like, no, you've got talent, you can do this. And I came out and I thought, sod it, I'm going for it. I did, and then straight away I got cast in this film, The Seven, which is premiering tomorrow.
Wow.
And then from that I got the other one in LA, and then I've got my acting agent, and I'm constantly up for auditions. I had an audition with the Warner Brothers series and the Sky series in the last month.
So it's really starting to pick up a bit.
Yeah, and you know, I'm still training, I'm still going to workshops and classes and meeting as many, you know, casting directors as I can, and just trying to, it's a building process because I've got to change an image as well, and I fully am aware of that.
Do you think that's part of the problem? That, like, do you think it is a problem, first of all?
For sure, because, you know, it doesn't look like I'm serious when but people don't know because they've only ever seen me on these shows. I can't change that, I have to do it myself.
Doesn't it?
But also takes it away as well.
I mean, do you regret doing Celebrity Big Brother?
No, I loved Celebrity. Do you know what? That, I think that's what helped me. It was probably X on the Beach, which was the one that was like, oh, Jess, you kind of done yourself there. But, you know, it's all learning curves, isn't it? And I think everyone needs a second opportunity to get their, you know, get themselves going again. And if no one ever got a second chance, we'd all be in a standstill world because no one would grow and become something they was destined to be.
That's very true.
It's very true. But you're acting, you love acting, and this is now you're going to go from strength to strength. Yeah. So Seven is out tomorrow. And what is the part you're playing? Tell us.
So, without ruining the whole film, and my producer's probably listening to me like, don't you dare say it, I get to play something very different to what you'd normally, I'd be cast as a Dolly Bird or, you know, something like prancing.
You're an old witch.
I'm a scary one. I get to be a bit scary on this one. So, I'll show you my WhatsApp picture later, Lizzie. But it's quite frightening.
Do you put spells on people? Because I need one on someone very quickly.
We can work on those.
Those pins and
is it, when you're filming something like that, that obviously for the viewer is supposed to be terrifying, is it actually scary or is it quite funny? I imagine it's a bit like,
do you know what?
Pretending to be scary is funny. I don't know.
I was worried at this. I hadn't played this particular part before, and I took my script to my acting teacher and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I've never done this. I need help. And he said, once you're in hair and makeup and you're in the setting, I promise you, you're just going to character. Just keep working on it and you'll do it. So I did, got there. And when I was all done up, I felt like a bad ass. I like literally walked past people and people were like, whoa. And then I thought, oh, actually, I am dangerous
and
scary.
You're like becoming the character.
Yeah.
It's like Angelina Jolie is Maleficent or something. Like, I imagine once you've got the outfit on, suddenly
you're like, right, here I am.
Exactly.
Here she comes again. She's that witch. And apart from all the work, so you're doing so well. I'm so proud of you because I've known you for ages. She's such a lovely person. The love front.
I wish there was some love, and I joke. There's someone that I'm talking to, but I'm 30 now, and I don't want to go. I'm kind of in this space where the next person I meet, it needs to be someone that's deadly serious, because I do want children, I do want a family. Not saying I want it now, but obviously I was with someone before for 4 years, and I didn't even know them at the end. I didn't even know who, you know, I didn't expect them to be how they were. So for me, I want to make sure it's someone that I can grow with and not just waste another 2 years or another 3 years and then suddenly I'm 40 and I'm still...
That's exactly how I feel.
Do you regret marrying, looking back?
I don't... I feel it's all a learning curve and it happened... I mean, trust me, divorce took a lot longer than the actual wedding in Vegas, so that was the long part.
You're one of a long string of women who've learned this.
I cannot believe how long that took. But no, I'm glad it happened. You know, at one point, you know, I wouldn't have married him if it wasn't. I didn't feel
something. Yeah. You have to accept that there was a time when you felt differently.
Yeah, there was a time when we both must have felt differently, and then it ended. And you know, everything has a cycle, doesn't it? A beginning and an end. And mine just came a bit quicker than I thought with that.
Are you friendly or
no? We don't speak.
Right.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I wish him no harm. I wish him all the best, and I hope his career and his life is just magical. But just not together.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
What a lovely way to think.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I'll feel like that soon.
I wouldn't count on it. So, what was it like working with Dean? Kane.
Yeah, because he's Superman.
But also, he has a bit of a controversial reputation these days.
He does. I see his Twitter.
So he's kind of pro-gun, Republican, pro-Trump. All of these things. Yeah. So I remember him as the very attractive Superman that I had a massive crush on watching before Live and Kicking on a Saturday morning. Keeping it a secret because I was probably about 11 or 12 years old.
Hot Superman. But then he has,
like, what's he like? Tell us.
So I was so nervous the first day I got to meet him, and I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And he came in completely normal, completely lovely. And then he gave me a lift back to my hotel, like, not even in a creepy way. It took me for, like, said, oh, this is CBS, because I actually met him in LA the first time, even though we were filming in the UK. We had one day over in LA. So he's just telling me about the Hollywood Hills and, like, a few Hollywood stories.
That's nice.
And then he's like, off to my meeting now. And I was like, lovely to meet you. And then that was that. So I have nothing but lovely things to
say
about
Dean.
Nice. Yeah.
And he's at the premiere tomorrow. Is he flown in?
Yeah.
Oh,
he's
over. I might have to just rock out. Where is the premiere tomorrow?
Mile End. Genesis Theatre.
Oh, I love the Genesis. I love the Genesis. Mm. It's actually a very nice little cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah, gorgeous.
I'm excited. Oh,
he'll fly in, will he?
He is, yeah. I'll be on his back. I'll be his lowest lane for the day.
You're Terry Hatcher.
Yeah. Don't just swoop me
up aside, Terry.
What's like the future plans then? Have you got any other stuff coming up?
So, just auditions at the moment. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it'll be this all again in March for when Rhea's released. But I'm just hoping to keep on with the acting and keep building blocks. If not, I have literally no other qualifications except theatre school, so I...
Well, there's always reality TV.
And I love Amanda Barry, helped you so much, because she's so adorable.
And she always, whenever I have an audition, I'll text Amanda, but like, oh, Amanda, I've got an audition for this. And she's like, I'm sending you sprinkles of fairy dust. And I'm like, love you, Amanda.
Oh, that's
she's
really
a
sweet.
Good person. Yeah, she's amazing. I'm very excited. I feel this is going to happen.
FUBAR Radio presents... Nick Helm and Nathaniel
Metcalf's Fan Club. We're joined in the studio by Michael O'Hare.
He's the man from Uncle.
I thought, bloody hell, if there was ever a scandal, they'd say Uncle Fucker. But, you know, someone's telling their story, but I'm actually quite well behaved and my career never got to that level. So
it's also, fine. You never fucked your uncle.
I never fucked my uncle, and I want that to go on the record. Can we have that as
he
a
didn't.
Little
absolutely
jingle?
Didn't.
I absolutely did, 100%
didn't. Yeah, but did he
didn't.
Fuck you?
Anyway, so
it's a very different thing, isn't it?
We're just joined in the studio by Ingrid Oliver, and we're discussing fart jokes. Our favourite fart jokes. Have you got any favourite fart jokes? By all means, write in to...
I've been a fan. I'll hashtag
I've got a fart for you.
Yeah, considering I hate them, well, I'm really talking about them a lot.
I really hate acknowledging... Yeah, anyway.
So I saw a filmed insert with the band McFly, and they're in like a limo or something chatting. And one of them farted, and it just really made me laugh.
No.
I don't like a cartoon fart thing. I like a fart joke where it appears like someone shat themselves or something.
Oh, I'm
listening to Nick Helm and...
Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club.
We're joined in the studio by good old Jack.
My name's Jack Barry.
Because The Meg is coming out, isn't it?
Yes.
Which is the film about the giant shark. It's got the best line of any film, I think, ever made. Yeah. Jason Statham's swimming around in his little... You know, like a one-man submarine... And a 50-foot megalodon swims over him, and he just goes, "It's a megalodon." Absolutely outstanding work there, Steve. And we're joined in the studio now by my friend and yours, Mr. Tom Meaton.
Hello, listeners.
I don't think there's any doubt that everyone in this room has.
The masters.
And I like to think of this show as a masterclass.
You're right in that way. And of course, we know that making people laugh is very hard.
The worst gig I ever had was a corporate gig for a bank, and it went so badly. And there was one point I remember having an out-of-body experience, and I was just about to get down to my pants, right? And... the guy went, "You're disgusting! You're disgusting! You're disgusting!"
Every Friday, Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club from 12 p.m.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
We're joined in the studio now by Max Halley and...
Not Haley. The 50s pop star.
Or the Comet.
My great-great-great-great-great-great-granddad.
Is a Comet?
Was Edmund Halley, the astronomer royal.
Is that right?
After whom the Comet is named, yeah. Quite an amazing guy.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah, for real.
So you are the owner of Max's Sandwich Shop.
Yes,
which is a sandwich shop in Crouch Hill.
Yeah.
You did ancient history.
Yeah.
And then you graduated.
Yeah.
Flying colours.
Yeah.
Then you leave university.
Yeah.
You're in London. You're unemployed. What do you do?
or you get a job in a shit publishing company and hate it. And then I, doing something I really actively didn't enjoy, made me realise that actually I sat around in my office plotting my lunch and plotting my dinner, and I just realised, oh, fuck all this. Like, sort of, I was phoning people up, selling classified ads in the back of a trade magazine, and I don't think it worked. I think it was, I was quite good at it, you know. I've got a fat mouth on me, and I sold lots of people these classified ads. And the truth is, I don't really think it works. I think it's, no one looks at those things. And I, you know, it was sort of soul destroying. I felt like I was
for nothing.
Kind of ripping people off for a living, you know. And that, I just thought, and anyway, that was when I realised that I was just, I wanted to work in the food business.
Because you were sort of obsessing with food.
Yeah, and like, my dad's a wine journalist, so I've kind of grown up in quite a foodie, winey world anyway. Like, holidays as a kid was all, I don't know, go to the winery and eat some kind of mushed up comfy duck or whatever it might be. And yeah, so I just, it was just natural. It is the thing that I am most interested in.
It's a weird thing, isn't it, food? Because I think people underestimate it, but I'm on tour at the moment and I can't eat before I go on stage because it slows me down. Mm. And so we're constantly hunting for places to eat at 3 o'clock or at 11 o'clock at night.
Mm.
And it's like this thing where you have to plan your day around when you're going to eat. You have to eat.
We all must eat or we shall die.
So you do end up spending the majority of your time thinking about what you want to eat,
where you're going to eat, when,
when, how, and where you're going to get your next meal from.
But also you're going in sort of small towns and things often where you're probably not going to find much at 11 that it's going to be anything.
No.
It's like kebab shops and curry houses, isn't it?
Well, we've had a lot of curry.
I love a countryside curry house.
There is such a thing as too many curry houses.
Yes,
we've eaten curry almost every night. So hunting around for food and thinking about it and obsessing about it.
And then it became restaurants. I've got a little rant about how I feel about it, actually, of like why I work in restaurants. So you got that famous fact with the humans and the dolphins, right? That only the humans and the dolphins fuck for pleasure, not just for procreative purposes.
Sure.
And so what they say the humans and the dolphins have done is they have converted a mere biological function
into a joy.
Yeah. Yeah, into something wonderful.
I know
and
I
a
have.
Joy. And I'm not sure if it counts on your own, bruv.
It's with a dolphin. So everyone's happy.
To be fair.
Yeah, and so, like I said before, we all have to eat or we're going to die. Literally, we all must consume calories to burn for energy to stay alive. And what a great restaurant does is just like the humans and the dolphins. It's taken the mere kind of consuming of calories for energy and it's converted that into a joy.
You're right, it's a nice,
and I think that's fundamentally, that's a wonderful thing to do for a living, you know? It's really, you're kind of giving people something wonderful. You know, they could literally just eat like plain pasta or toast or whatever, and you're probably going to get a significant level of the nutrition that you would require to stay alive.
Although David Trent said that thing recently, isn't he? Where he's lost a lot of weight. He's a friend of ours, and he was saying that his thing is he's had to stop thinking of food as always being pleasurable, and sometimes just think of it as being fuel,
sustenance.
Yeah, just go. Stop thinking of it like it's something you've always got to be like. Oh,
that you always need to have seconds off
on like on a pornographic level.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's the way to stop thinking about it. You go, oh, yeah, I guess that's right.
It's lunch.
Yeah, that's all it is. Doesn't have to be something incredible.
Well, that might help me.
Doesn't have to be sexy. Sometimes it's just milking your dick.
Whoa.
No, I think that was a different conversation.
Oh, sorry.
Whoa.
I was thinking about the dolphins.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on, as you were.
Lunch, innit?
Yeah.
Sandwiches and that.
So if you could eat anything right now, what would it be?
You've got something with you.
Half a toasty.
Where have you got your toasty from?
From my girlfriend's cheese shop. It's called Wine and Rind, and it is in Holcombe Market in Tottenham.
Good title.
Yeah.
It's a very good title.
What's your favourite cheese?
What's my favourite cheese? Well, you see, I don't really eat cheese. What? Like, there's never been any... There's been no cheese in any sandwiches at the sandwich shop. In fact, at the moment, there is a... My girlfriend's called Holly Chavez, and there is... There's a sandwich on the menu called a lasagna sandwich for Holly Chavez that has bechamel with taleggio in it. And it is the first and only cheese that has ever been in a sandwich in the sandwich shop.
Wow. But yeah. You'd have thought that that would have been like one of the first things.
Exactly. And I think that was put like, that's why I was never bothered about
because
not putting cheese in.
Because you've got that contact though.
Because, well, yeah, I mean, I think cheese is a bit, it's a bit like... In the early 2000s, if you were a vegetarian, all you ever ate in restaurants was mushroom risotto and beetroot and goat's cheese, in like be it a tart or a shitty little salad or whatever. And I think that in sandwiches, cheese has been that. Like, it's not in toasties because you're melting it; it's becoming something else. But yeah. Like, it's like the default veggie thing that it's like, oh, we need a veggie sandwich. We can't use ham or bacon. Cheese. And so I wanted, when the Sarnie shop opened, I wanted to, you know, I was trying to turn the Sarnie into something you could have for dinner, like, because we only opened at night. And yeah, I didn't use cheese like deliberately because it just seemed sort of too, too obvious a thing for the veggie option. And like we do spring rolls or croquettes and stuff like that.
You sort of serve too much because yours is kind of can be post pub, but also just be your dinner, right?
It's exactly. It really is.
It could be pre or post.
Yeah, it can be pre or post or during, wherever the dolphin happens to be at the time.
So you are a fan of alcohol.
Yes.
What is
I was asked earlier by Irene. She said, "What are you a fan of?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know."
Alcohol.
Most
and,
things.
And,
alcohol.
And
I'm
not
an enthusiast.
Being a dick.
Not being a dick.
So is that not being a dick on alcohol?
No, probably, unfortunately not. No.
Right. Okay. No, cool. So why are you a fan of alcohol?
You can pickle things in it.
You can pickle stuff in it. You can ferment it and make vinegar.
Is that what you're a fan of alcohol? Fuck off.
This Halloween, FUBAR Radio presents...
Fear, as you've never felt it before.
We're joined in the studio by Matthew Holness.
Hello.
You've just written and directed feature
first
film.
Feature, yeah, with yeah. A horror film.
Watch what Crappins would like to think it's...
What was that?
Ghost in the Machine.
Or maybe not.
Okay, carry on.
That was terrifying. Well, it is our Halloween special.
Well, there we are.
So we've now got actual ghosts.
It's my Halloween special anyway.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
If this was a 70s spooky film set in a radio, that'd be the first thing that would happen.
That's right. That's the...
You'd just get a little tiny bit, and as it would go on, it would escalate.
That's it. We're not getting out of here.
Screams that give you the chills.
It's the one and only Michael Griffiths from Love Island, Michael.
Yes, it is.
Which couple were the loudest in bed?
Tommy and Molly. I slept next to them, and I like there's times I'm just looking at them like, can you stop? Like, I'm trying to sleep. Like, just let me fall asleep, then continue your business. I don't know what they were doing, but they were active.
My word.
Nate's the end in a nightmare.
Welcome to the Tuesday Takeover. My name is Cece Coleman. I am here with the lovely Gavin.
Hello, everybody.
We have Natasha.
Legero.
And we have her husband.
Moshe Kasher.
I kind of got kidnapped on a date once.
Whoa.
Yeah. We met up for drinks, and she'd had like a bottom half of wine already.
She was drunk.
Oh, my God.
We ended up just like hanging out back at her new place. I spilt red wine on her brand spanking new sofa.
She could have beat your ass, Gavin.
Exactly. I actually did stay the night. I kept hearing her getting up to lock the doors and lock windows. I had this really horrible feeling that I was locked in.
Well, you were locked in.
Well, yeah.
Halloween on FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio presents Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
We should say hello to our third and final guest, George the Poet.
I've got a theory, I might as well throw this out early.
Please.
I feel like there's a formula for everything. If you know that as an artist, you're going to be putting out work that is most exciting to you at that given moment, and you know that you're going to change as a person, then we can actually calculate the formula of what your output's going to be. We know that it's going to take your present moment, your vibes, whatever music you're listening to, whatever book you might be reading, add all of that up, and it's going to output exactly your projection of yourself in all of that.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville. Every Wednesday from 4 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Our first guest is the remarkable Breeze.
What's that, sir?
Thank you.
That's a very good fetching fleece you're wearing.
I know. I was looking at it thinking, this is winter garms.
I have no idea what the weather's going to be doing. So.
I was going to say, it makes me realise that you don't really like a breeze then, do you?
You see, like a breeze,
feel a cold breeze.
Not a cold one. Like
not
a refreshing breeze. That's what
breeze,
I am,
do
you know what I mean?
Yeah, if you're
in a hot country and like you get a little...
That's the kind
of breeze that you like.
Yeah, that's me, innit?
Are you fond of travelling to warmer climates for holidays, or are you more of a city break guy?
No. I'm in the city already, so...
It's true though, isn't it?
I like your way of thinking.
Definitely hotter climates, beaches.
I'm not going to lie, I favour city breaks, you know?
No, I don't. I can't
stand beaches. I can.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I can't.
I'd rather
get a bike and cycle around a city.
That's cool.
But in a hot climate
or a cold climate?
Tepid. Tepid. I favour tepid. You know what I mean? Not too hot, not too cold. You know what I mean?
I'm definitely a hot climate kind of guy. Beach or pool.
But you know what I mean? You are the coolest person on Love Island.
It's very true.
I was bringing
the breeze to Love Island.
That's
you know
the
what I'm
thing.
Saying?
How...
There you go.
If you can handle Love Island, then you can literally handle any climate to be
true.
On holiday to relax
it's
in.
True.
You get me? So you've got an advantage there. You know what I mean?
Experience.
But me, I have to be in just a cool city rather than a super sweltering.
But I get that because you go to new places, architecture you want to check out.
There you go.
Museums. And
yeah, exactly. Soak up the culture. I feel like you can't really do that on the beach too tough.
Unless you're on Easter Island. Soak up the cocktails though.
Soak up the cocktails. So staying on the subject of travelling and stuff, how far afield has music taken you?
Japan.
Ooh.
Oh, sick. Guadeloupe.
Ooh.
Loads of European countries. Mauritius.
Nice. Just all these uncharted. Obviously, they've been discovered, these places.
Yeah, discovered.
But I've never heard anyone say I've done a gig in Guadeloupe. Mm. Or I've never heard anyone say I've done a gig in Mauritius.
But that's dope, though.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Years ago, because when I rap in English, and sometimes I rap in English and Yoruba.
Right.
Which is my
mother tongue.
Mother tongue.
Mm.
Kinda. And I got headhunted by a Cuban jazz pianist because he heard I rapped in Yoruba.
Mm.
He wanted me on tour with him.
Amazing.
So we went on a world tour, went to different places. That really opened up my eyes to, do you know what I mean, like how universal music is.
Yeah.
And we were in countries where sometimes the audience didn't even understand English, but
they were moved by the music. Yeah, there you go.
So
that's the best language. You know,
that's it.
It's the best language, music. Am I right in saying that there's like a direct influence on Cuban music from like West African?
Yeah, well, a lot of people from within Cuba, Brazil, they kept onto Yoruba traditions and religions. So in some places you'll hear them speak Yoruba, but it's a very old version.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I couldn't even understand everything they were saying. But
so it's just bucking up on a man with an iPhone 1.
Them ones.
Yeah.
Metaphor.
And it's impressive. It's impressive.
It was really something else.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. It would have been interesting to... I would have loved my grandma to hear that, to see how much of it she recognised.
Yeah, that would have
been really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about the new single.
Yes.
It's produced by Archer, who's a friend of ours here. He's been on the show, I think, sometime this year, maybe, or maybe even last year.
Yeah, because his album came out this year.
So, you guys have been
rolling together
for a while.
You know what? We've been friends for a little while. I run a hip-hop educational organisation called Student of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we go into schools and we speak about hip-hop, the culture of hip-hop, different elements, and then we do like rap and poetry workshops.
Amazing.
So get young people to create their own lyrics,
do
different projects. We've done like music videos and just different things, tackling different issues in schools, primary school all the way to secondary school.
Okay.
And over the years, I went into school and then I bumped into Archer in one of the schools I was in. So we did a project in his school that he was in at the time. And yeah, I just knew him as a dope MC.
Mm.
And it wasn't until probably early last year, we were just chatting and then he told me, he makes beats. I was like, what? all right, send me some, send me some. So he sent me a batch, and I chose like 5 beats. I was like, brethren, please just hold on to these. Hold on to these. And Stay Diligent was one of the tunes there. Yeah.
I love the feeling of putting beats on layaway. I love that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's such a cool and like honest transaction. But it's always one of those ones, it's like, how long is this going to be on layaway for? I bet that's what producers always think when an MC goes, I beg you hold that beat for me. I bet everyone's thinking, yeah, but you know.
Sometimes as MCs, and I'm guilty of this, we'll even take the tune, we'll even vocal it, but nothing happens.
Yeah.
So that's even worse.
This is true, actually. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I fell in love with the beat, and I just held on to it for a little bit, and yeah, I knew I was going to do Stay Diligent over it once I heard it. But I'd actually, the funny thing is, I'd actually recorded the video to Stay Diligent before I got the beat.
How does that happen?
I know.
Was it kind of not really a performance video? Was it more like a short film or something?
It was literally...
Or you just actually, fucking psychic?
I was kind of, but
just
I...
knew the tempo,
he was
rapping. Bars, everything about
it. It was an acapella thing.
Kind of. No, what happened was... I was doing a gig in Switzerland.
Right.
And I was shooting a mini documentary at the time. So I just told my videographer, look, we're going to be in a dope hotel. The scenery is meant to be really beautiful. So just bring all your stuff, blah, blah, blah. So he brought stuff. And when we got there, I was just like, we could shoot something here, you know?
Yeah.
Just
such good foresight.
Yeah, just shoot something simple.
Yeah.
Me walking around the city, blah, blah, blah. And then we had footage from the gig the night before. So I was like, all right, let's do it. So... But I thought to myself, I don't have a beat. So I had to put my earphones in and play an instrumental.
Right.
So I played I think it was a Dilla instrumental, and I basically rapped over that. There was no hook, nothing. I just did like 2 verses back to back, boom, on a rooftop. We filmed the whole thing.
Yeah.
So when we finally got the beat, I went back to Archer. I said, Archer, you need to match the BPM.
That's genius, though. I rate that a lot.
Yeah, and it came together. When we saw the video and it synced up nicely, I was like, yes.
Smashed it.
Yeah. See?
Yeah, so there was a science behind all of that. That's crazy.
That's the craft,
Bruce
though, isn't it, bro?
Bruce Forsyth over
trust
it.
Trust me.
That's brilliant. It's a testament, I suppose, to your vision, isn't it? If you can kind of do something like that, you know, use... Because we find ourselves in such nice locations all the time, innit?
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of There's us wish
times.
That we could project that and let other people see
Morocco.
It, you know? Right?
Oh, places my gosh, like I was that. In Morocco and I was just like, I need to shoot a video.
Mm.
But, you know, I was like, I'll be back.
Yeah.
It was beautiful there.
That's brilliant. So how did you get to share the stage with Angie Stone?
She was just having like a little, I don't know, like a breakdown section in her actual set.
Oh, thank God there was like an extra bit of that sentence. I thought she was having a bit of a breakdown.
she'd asked if there was anyone in the house who rapped, and I jumped out of my seat and I was like, yeah, man, I'm here.
Of course.
And she was like, yeah, man, you look like family, man, blah, blah, blah.
That's brilliant. Because you do bear a similarity to, you know, to Questlove and Black Thought.
Well,
especially Black Thought.
Okay,
you know?
Okay.
Especially Black Thought,
yeah. That's my brother, man. That's my brother.
Yeah, man. I think he's definitely someone that any self-respecting MC should look up to.
Yeah, definitely.
And regard as
definitely,
their brother.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Because he's out here fighting for lyricism,
no, he
man.
Is, he
Do you
is,
know what I mean?
He
like,
is,
sometimes for like 15 minutes at a time.
At a time,
and shit.
Man. Yeah, he's a beast on the mic. He's
savage. I love that guy.
Serious. He's
Absolutely
serious.
Love that guy.
FUBAR Radio presents
Ian Molesworth.
We're joined now, obviously, by Daniel Sloss.
The reason I did Drunk History is because I'm like, do I want to get fucking drunk and talk about Scottish history?
Yeah, you could do that.
Do I want to make fun of Desiree Burge and Phil Wang for money? I want to fucking do that.
Do that in your, one of your little comedy cliques with you all up.
I would do, if there was a fucking version of Total Wipeout, that I would do that in a second. I wouldn't do Bob the Week, but I would do Total Wipeout in a heartbeat for no money.
Is that the one where people just get thrown into water all the time?
Oh, big fucking red balls. That looks fun.
Ian Molesworth.
Every Monday from 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
We're joined by Flo and Joan.
But hello.
Am I doing that? Am I doing Flo and Joan?
Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I don't know where to do romance or not. I don't know what the rules are.
When it goes formal, do Flo and Joan. And when it goes informal,
What are your, it's always informal.
Okay.
Like,
just Nicola Rose,
honestly, it's informal, like you'll never have seen before.
When the pomp and circumstance happens.
Yeah, there's none of that.
Okay.
It's very informal. The last guest came in, took his watch off, graded himself at home, didn't he?
Nice. Producer's just shoved a coat on, sits in the corner having a tea.
Just call us a couple of slags and then we'll just get the show on the road.
I think you could. I'm not sure I could. That might be where the issue is. Are we talking about your tour?
Yeah.
And your extra fringe shows as well. I've got to mention as well. Don't forget.
Hello.
That's what they've been put on there. Extra fringe shows that we need to promote as well. How are you finding it? It's been a bit odd for you, hasn't it, really, in terms of like the way this has all happened?
Just life.
Yeah, the life generally has been a really odd experience.
Bit of a ride. Yeah, it has been a little bit.
You know
bit.
What I mean, though? It has been like you kind of couldn't have predicted it. And so, like, when you're starting out doing stuff, you can't go, well, this is what will break us. This is what, you know, what the thing will be.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an odd thing. How's that been from the inside?
You're
handling it really well.
Every time we get to do something that we get paid for to do the thing that we'd like to do,
right,
then you say a little prayer and then hope that you can do it again.
Yeah.
Even stuff that we're not getting paid for, you do stuff where you're like, this is wild.
Yeah, we never knew we'd be doing this, so everything we take as it comes, and then hopefully it will carry on for a while. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it carries on for. I don't know if there's a rule. You know what? So when you start thinking about it, that's when it gets scary.
No, I get that, but I do think there is a degree of, and I don't say this in any disrespectful way at all, but it really shows how luck comes into play in terms of a creative career, in terms of, you know, how you've heard that creative career, that luck is actually a part of that. So it doesn't mean you're lucky in that you don't deserve it. It means that, God, imagine, it's like Bob Mortimer tells a story about Big Night Out, where he was literally walking down, I think it was Lewisham High Street or something, and he just saw on a lamppost Vic Reed's Big Night Out on a photocopied thing, and went, I'm going to go to that.
Yeah.
And there were 7 people in the audience when he went to it, and he just loved it and just kept going every week. Now, what chances that he sees that poster, and what chances that he sees it and walks past it, and then when you trace it back to that point, you go, that's so fucking lucky, really.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm always intrigued by that sort of stuff. Well, Johnny Vegas is a good case in point. He was doing, you know, tremendous things live, and people knew him, and he was very well known in the industry. But then it took a monkey in an advert that actually was the thing that went, no, there's Johnny.
Yeah.
As in for the public.
Yes,
which he's
fought
against ever since, because it's not actually in line with what he was doing on stage. Yeah. But, you know, these moments, I think, I find them really interesting.
Yeah, it is like, it is all timing. I think everything we've done has been timing, and it's just been wild. Which does make you, like, when you know how cool it is when timing works for you, because it's worked so well for us right now, you don't want to sit, when you're ever sitting at home and, like, twiddling your thumbs, being like, oh, we haven't had any work in a while, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, timing works in different ways. It can be like good, and then all the other times when you're like, oh, we haven't done anything for a while, it's like, yeah, but you did pretty well for a while too. So like, it's you can't sort of run, otherwise we'd be running like 300 miles an hour into a wall if like things kept happening to us the way they did when we first started.
But I presume that wasn't the game plan, if indeed you even had one, you know what I mean? I presume that wasn't necessarily how you thought that would go.
We had no idea. We just started doing it for fun, and then you'd get like couple fun gigs, and then it just leads on, just domino effects onto other stuff.
We also like, because we started doing it in Toronto, and we talk about this all the time, people think we're like Canadian files, but that's just where we started doing it. But I love Canada, happy Thanksgiving.
Why do you love Canada?
They were just really cool, they were just really nice to us, and like very supportive and kind, and like put us on shows when we were still a bit shit,
right? Okay.
And like gave, like, we'd have bad gigs and people would invite us back, and still they knew that we weren't always shit.
Right.
So we could like really eat a lot of dirt, and they'd still be like, oh, I come back next week though.
It's
and like
isn't it nice to love a place because they don't think you're shit?
Yeah. What a gift.
They might have thought they might don't think I'm shit.
They could have just been humouring us.
Also true. Or they had no idea what we were saying because they just enjoyed our accent so much that they were just like, oh, you can just keep doing it. And they're just really kind. And like, even now they're like plug our shows and stuff where you're like, you're not even here. Like, you're never gonna, what are you gaining from this? Like, which is such an awful way to think about it, of like, why are you doing this? What do you, what do you want? But like, but they were always really nice. And they just, like, it was just a great place for us to like cut our teeth and like fail and just keep doing it and be fine. So that when we did our first Edinburgh, like when we first moved to the UK, we were ready, and it was, we weren't It was just nice. They were just, they kept us, I'm doing great.
You're right there.
No, just having a small, just thinking of too many memories.
Yeah, no, no. See, the trick there, don't never interrupt someone when they're doing that. Because I always find it's always fun to go, I'm going to just see how long she can talk
yeah,
for.
Let's
just,
see.
Just, so never say nothing.
Let's
just
see
like,
if her head falls off. She reveals every right. secret about us. Yeah.
There's one time I was in a cupboard. Like, what?
I think we should start doing that more often, where I think we should bring guests in and I'll ask them a question and then just stare at them.
Yeah. Do you know what? I've just been listening to an interview with Kathy Griffin.
Okay.
And I was listening to her talk, and she does the same where they ask one really simple question and then 15 minutes later gets
she's
to the
talking.
Answer. She's done.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've just done exactly the same, but she was very funny and very succinct and just had lots of stories to tell where I've just babbled and I'm so already doing it again.
Yeah, it
telling a story about someone that's just done what I've done because I did what I did.
I'll stare at her. I'll stare at her.
Yeah, okay. I'm just going to fall off this really high chair and crawl out of a window. As I am wont to do.
Do you say anything?
Actually, you're more talkative. I don't know what's happened today.
I'm just letting you take the reins on this.
We're all yeah. amused by you taking
yeah,
the reins.
Huge that's shame for everyone.
FUBAR Radio presents Harriet Rose.
I'm joined by Post Malone.
Hi. First time I went to Wetherspoons, I was in Wolverhampton. It was like the first time I bought my legal beer. It was awesome.
I'm so sorry that that was your first.
No, listen, I love it. It's emblazoned in my mind.
So you've kind of got like a deep connection with Wetherspoons.
Wetherspoons is actually my life.
Was it inspiration for the album?
Yeah. I wrote it all at a Wetherspoons.
Have you eaten at a Wetherspoons?
No, I've never eaten there.
Okay.
Just drank. So you like dinner from Wetherspoons?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking shit.
Well, no, I am a little bit. It's shit.
But it's still good. Well, let's go.
Harriet Rose. Every Thursday from 4 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Welcome, Shay Lingo.
Yo.
We missed you. We were going to get you in a little while ago, but now we finally have you.
It's happened.
We've got you in our grasp.
We're here.
We're here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really well. What's the biggest thing you've learned from getting in the studio with somebody else? You don't have to name names, but like, is there a moment you were like, oh, wow, I never kind of saw that coming or whatever?
I've literally just come from a session with Joe Hertz. Yeah. So that was fantastic. And like, I went in and he just gave me a very like, tell me about yourself kind of vibe. So I did. And then we ended up on anime and all this other stuff. And I was showing him like, a Bill Wirtz video called The History of the Entire World or something like that. And it's just this really funny anecdotal way of very intelligently explaining everything that's happened from from the Big Bang all the way through to flipping the telephone. Like, and we just connected on
this.
Things that are not, there you go. We just connected on things that are not even to do with music. So when I'm in, I just kind of try my best to respect the energy of the room and respect the people that are in the room, musicians or not. And then just work my way into that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, the Sensitive EP obviously talked about sort of tackling the idea of masculinity and approach to women and relationships, which was, I think, a great and important thing for you to do as an artist. But also, interestingly, opening up conversations, because at the moment we are talking about sort of toxic masculinity and how it can affect men, young men, which then leads on to suicide and things that are prevalent, especially in the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
Not just especially, in fact, across the board.
Yeah, definitely.
You're very open and honest in your music.
Yeah, that's just how I am as a person. The person I was raised to be, do you know what I mean? Like, the Sensitive EP kind of encompasses all of my actual feelings at the time about how I felt not being able to lead the relationship where I wanted it to go. And not necessarily because I was battling with that, with the person I was trying to be with, but more because I was back and forth. And it was actually a conversation, whereas before it would just naturally be me. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
That would just lead it the way. And it was like, I don't necessarily feel badly about this, but how do I feel about this? And why do I feel weird about this? Do you know what I mean? And then I do a lot of self-evaluation. So I kind of like evaluate and I thought, okay, well, like off of the things that I've seen online and things that questions I can ask myself that I've never asked myself before. And because of my privilege as a man, do you know what I mean? And things like that just kind of put me in a place where I was like, let me question these things and try and adjust and calculate a way to move that is a little bit more genuine in how I approach relationships and how I approach women that I was and I'm attracted to. Do you know what I mean? In that way. And I'm in a committed relationship now because of it. So yeah, I can only thank it.
That's so nice.
Thank you.
It's just so nice to hear you speak like that, because I think it's the way you came to your
decisions and choices about mm-hmm. the way you were going to approach a relationship was so nice. It's like, this isn't working. What about me can I look at? Because the thing that I think a lot of people forget is the only person that you can change is yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And I think sometimes people think there's only one way to change, which is very drastically, like polar. Do you know what I mean? And it's not, it's the small things you do that will create a gradual change that you might not even notice as a person. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Sensitive was about. It was about me deciding, all right, all of these things I'm not really thinking about, let me turn them into concepts in my head that I'm going to try and practice a little bit more, and just in small ways. Do you know what I mean? And then eventually it became enough for me to create the mentality that I have now towards communication, towards relationships, towards masculinity, towards all of that stuff. And I just feel more at peace about my presence as a man because of it, and less threatened. Do you know what I mean? Because I think a big part of male ego is about feeling threatened by other males or situations you can't control. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, that was the Sensitive EP, was kind of me conceptualizing that and then releasing that pressure a bit.
And do you talk to your other male friends about this?
All the time.
And
all the time.
And what was the response when you first started doing that?
I have quite open-minded friends, and I don't even want to say open-minded in the sense that this is a topic you have to be open-minded about. It's just something you just should know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Should is a pretty word, though. So yeah, nah, they like we kind of just have conversations, and sometimes then the topic might end up on women at this point, and I might just be like, nah, that's not cool. Do you know what I mean? I'll be the one, I'm always the one to like be like, nah, that's not cool. Like, or how come you feel that way about it? Oh, because blah blah. No. I'm like, yeah, but bro, it's not that deep. Like, what are you trying to control? Do you know what I'm saying? And then the conversation will become wider rather than me. It's never an attack on anyone else's way of behaving, because everybody changes at different points. But it's more like just me trying to take the stance of being interested in why you think that way, and then finding emotionally intelligent points to like drop in the lessons that I've learned. And I'm never disagreed with. Do you know what I mean? In terms of what I'm saying, it's not like, ah, oh, no, I'm not doing that. It's like, do you know what? Fair enough, bro. And at some point, I hope I get there. Do you get me? So at least now it's in your head. It's like, do you get me, more than anything else?
But also I think as well, the one mind that you change is then going to go on and share that changed mind with...
Each one teach one, isn't it?
Yeah. Gosh, each one teach one. I like that.
Yeah, so that's an old one. That's
okay.
Old one.
You could have taken that for your own. I would have had
idea. Ask any old Rasta man about each one teach one.
Well, it's my new favourite. So you need... Thank you for passing that on to me.
Cool, no worries.
Now, before we go, mm-hmm. I'm going to play a little game with you.
Okay.
It's called Harriet's High Fives.
Harriet's High Fives.
Welcome to Harriet's High Fives.
Nice.
That was... I tried to do
that
one
thing,
of those.
Yeah, I was
no,
about
wait,
to.
Can I just say, I can do it on that side, but I tried to do it on my left-hand side.
And it just was a fail. Yeah.
Oh, how embarrassing. Fuck.
That, I'm not judging you.
Okay. Shay Lingo.
Go for it.
In this game.
Nice.
In this game.
Nice.
You're going to answer 5 questions about yourself.
Okay. About myself?
Yeah.
All right. Damn. All right, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's always really stressed out and or surprised by the fact that it's about them.
Yeah.
So Harriet's High Fives, they are all about the person.
Okay.
Or people's.
Thank you for doing the research.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Oh, I've even got 6 questions here, so
damn.
I can pick.
Damn. You might have to pay for the last one.
On Spotify.
Go.
Which are your top 3 most streamed tracks in order of ranking?
In order of ranking, as in ranking as they appear on Spotify.
Yeah, but I'm gonna give you 3 options.
Okay.
Mad Angle, Circles, Same Energy.
Yeah.
Circles, Same Energy, Mad Angle. Mad Angle, Circles, Moonwalk. I can repeat those if
it's
you need them.
It's the first one.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Well done. Okay.
Thank you.
I see you.
Yeah, man.
All right. Correct. Which song?
Mm-hmm.
Is the lyric "I'm nocturnal with this hustle" from? Is it Distance, Circles, or Zuko?
Zuko.
Yes, he knows about himself. Okay.
Of course he does.
In your in your Big Doubts video,
yeah,
you're wearing a yellow jacket.
Yes. Fun fact: it wasn't actually a yellow jacket.
Oh.
It was a red jacket from Typical that I didn't want to be the same.
He's literally just answered the question before I even asked it. Boom. What colour does your jacket briefly change to? What colour was it?
It's actually green in the
video.
Yeah.
There you Correct go. Answer. Didn't even need to. God, you are. How many have we done so far? That was 3. So you've got 2 more. No one has ever got 5 out of 5. Okay. And we've had some big people do this.
Nice.
Like.
Let's get it.
It's tense. I'm going to do a hard one now.
Go on.
How many views has the video Black Girl Magic had? 1-772-983. Mm-hmm. 2-697-800. Mm-hmm. 3-800-104.
The first one.
Correct.
Yeah, I thought so.
Oh, well done. Oh, look, we're getting... Oh, we've got the stats up now. I'm going to give you the stats after. So you've got one final left.
Yeah.
This is really hard.
Okay, go on.
How many times was metal and rocks mentioned in the song of the same name? Is it 1, 48, 2, 54, or 3, 60? Oh, that's so hard.
48.
Oh, no.
It's not.
Mate, it was 54.
Oh, do you know what? I need to go in my gut, you know.
Damn! I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm so disappointed at that. You're listening to the best of Foo Bar Radio.